You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered.
Listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community and supported by the generosity of listeners like you. Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Don Guerra.
And I'm Todd Wicks. This is the Daily Local News for Tuesday, June 25th, 2019.
Coming up in the next half hour, our new program, ArtsBeat, speaks with area artists and advocates about their work and medium. But first, your daily headlines.
A lawsuit brought against the Indiana Department of Child Services today alleges the department doesn't protect children within its system of care. The Associated Press reports the lawsuit against DCS was filed in Evansville today. The plaintiffs in the case include Indiana Disability Rights and the advocacy organization A Better Childhood. Both organizations are represented by the law firm of Kirkland and Ellis on behalf of 9 Indiana foster children. Indiana's Department of Child Services has previously struggled to manage caseloads, with former DCS Director Mary Beth Bonaventura publicly submitting a letter of resignation in 2017, stating that the department was putting children at risk. The state legislature mandated smaller caseloads for caseworkers at DCS earlier this year during the long legislative session.
The South Bend Fraternal Order of Police issued a public letter yesterday in harsh criticism of Mayor Pete Buttigieg. Buttigieg, who hopes to secure the Democratic Party's presidential nomination, suspended campaigning last week after a black man was shot to death by a white officer in South Bend. In their letter, the South Bend Police Union criticized Mayor Pete, as he's been referred to on the campaign trail. Their public letter, published on their Facebook page, accuses Buttigieg of politicizing the shooting to his advantage. Buttigieg spoke at a town hall meeting on Sunday evening addressing racial tensions in the northern Indiana city.
I've heard the community express two things about the process that I just want to make clear right away where our administration is. The first is a desire for an outside look at what has taken place here by the U.S. Department of Justice. I recognize that request. I respect it. I will send a letter to the Department of Justice Civil Rights Division expressing that the city agrees. I cannot promise that they will act on it. Secondly, the community has expressed concern about the review underway by Metro Homicide. Because even though it is separate from the South Bend Police Department, it of course involves local law enforcement. Some in the community have asked for an independent investigator to be appointed by the prosecutor to take over. And I want to let you know that I agree with this recommendation as well, and that I notified the prosecutor that I would like for him to take that step. It is his decision, but I have let him know that I would like for that to happen and shared some of the reasons why.
Earlier on Sunday, 11 people were shot at a bar in South Bend, one of whom was declared dead. Police have stated they do not have a suspect in custody. The South Bend Fraternal Order of Police responded to Buttigieg's town hall in their statement, quote, "Mayor Buttigieg has in no way unified the community. Mayor Buttigieg continues to only focus on one incident and one family. Buttigieg has yet to comment on the large mass shooting in the recent history of South Bend." The statement continues, "The accountability level of officers has increased exponentially in the last several years," unquote. The South Bend Police Union letter states the union stands behind the officer who shot dead an African-American man accused of breaking into cars. The statement says the union follows the legal principle of the presumption of innocence. Debates between presidential candidates are expected to begin tomorrow. Due to the number of party candidates, the Democratic National Committee has determined to split the debates up into Wednesday night and Thursday night. Elizabeth Warren, Cory Booker, Julian Castro, Amy Klobuchar, Beto O'Rourke, Tulsi Gabbard, Jay Inslee, Bill de Blasio, and Tim Ryan will debate tomorrow night. Buttigieg will join Joe Biden, Bernie Sanders, Kamala Harris, Kirsten Gillibrand, Michael Bennett, John Hickenlooper, Eric Swalwell, Marianne Williamson, and Andrew Yang on Thursday's debate.
Over 160 Duke Energy customers are reportedly without power in Monroe County. Just before airtime, Duke's outage tracker reports 100 customers in Bloomington with reduced power or a power outage. A further 65 customers are impacted in Ellettsville. Duke did not state what caused the power outages, but estimates most customers will have their power restored late this afternoon. No other major outages are being reported across the rest of the state.
The City of Bloomington Utilities is receiving grant money to install sewer lines in the Broadview neighborhood. The money comes in the form of a federally funded community development block grant awarded through the city's Housing and Neighborhood Development Department, or HAND. Utilities engineer Phil Payton brought the news to the Utility Service Board last night. He says the Broadview neighborhood has been on a CBU's radar for a long time because of its aging septic systems.
It's for the Ralston sewer project in the Broadview neighborhood where we were able to provide sanitary sewer, gravity sewer, to 34 new customers that are currently on septic system. That's an older neighborhood with a lot of failing septic systems, decreasing the water quality for stormwater in the area.
Several board members voiced concern about whether residents of the low-income neighborhood would be able to afford connecting to the new sewer lines. Board member Gene Kapler discussed the issue with Payton and Utilities Director Vic Kelson, who says CBU is already receiving calls from interested residents.
And then my question is to the residents that are going to be moved from septic to hooking into the sewer, they're going to have to pay for their own plumbing to do that. And you said this is not an affluent neighborhood. Do we know if homeowners are aware of this and are able to afford to hook in?
We've reached out to the homeowners and attended the neighborhood association meeting, and so we've been receiving quite a few calls. Nancy Axum in our department for new services, she's been receiving quite a few calls about interest in hooking on.
So. And the other aspect of that is that, as Phil commented, the when your septic fails, the health department either will allow you to site another septic tank, or if you're within 300 feet of a sanitary sewer, you'll be required to connect to it. Part of the problem in this particular neighborhood is locating places for it to put a new septic tank is extremely difficult. They're small parcels to begin with, so if you've already had one fail, you may not have any space to put a new one in. So without an available sewer, that's going to be a problem. And as they fail, they really need another alternative.
Payton says other neighborhoods interested in sewer infrastructure cannot apply directly for CDBG grants. They would need CBU to apply for them. In response, board members Julie Roberts and Jason Banach suggested Kelson staff look for other funding options to help neighborhoods make the move from septic tanks to the city's sewer system.
Later in the meeting, Kelson addressed the city's 2019 water quality report. He emphasized that Bloomington does not have a lead or copper problem with its drinking water.
We've had some questions about the reported numbers for alkalinity and calcium ion in the water. Both of those concentrations have been low on a number of occasions. The reason for that is that Lake Monroe generally doesn't have a lot of hardness or a lot of alkalinity in it to begin with, and the treatment process, the coagulation process that we're used to treat the water actually removes some of those chemical species from the water. What those do is when we maintain the pH at 9.2 when we deliver the water, what that does is it provides compounds that can encourage the formation of scale inside of water pipes, and that scale prevents the dissolution of metals like lead and copper into drinking water. We don't have any lead pipe in our distribution system, and there's no lead in the water leaving the plant. But we have a lead and copper program where we do sampling in at customers' residences.
Kelson says lead has not been detected in the drinking water from CBU's water treatment plant or its distribution system. He says the water quality report indicates a lower than desirable concentration of calcium in municipal water, which forms the protective scale inside water pipes. According to a CBU press release, lead pipes fell out of use after 1986 due to amendments to the Federal Clean Water Act. However, Kelson says CBU offers a lead and copper program as a resource for residents.
If, as always, if anyone has a question about whether they might have lead in their home, you know, which would typically be from lead pipe within the home, we do provide sampling and analysis for that. So if people have questions about that, they can reach out to us through customer service. So,
the next meeting of the Utilities Service Board is scheduled for July 8th.
37 community organizations from around Monroe County are vying for funding from the county's Sophia Travis Community Service Grants Program. Last night, the county council's grant committee heard requests to fund projects supporting youth enrichment as well as food, health, and shelter needs. Committee Chair Cheryl Munson says the number of applicants grows every year. The grant committee includes both members of the county council and county residents. The Monroe County Council will award its 2019 grants on July 23rd. The council awarded $120,000 in Sophia Travis Community Service grants last year. The grants are named for former Monroe County Council member Sophia Travis.
Compassion was a recurring theme in a community conversation held Monday night on reforming Monroe County's criminal justice system. Here's one unnamed community member.
One thing I would like to see as a goal, and this comes out of some of what I heard at the last session, is respect for people. I think that if there is this power imbalance, and if the people with the power aren't showing respect to the people without, where is that modeled? And if someone doesn't show you respect, how do you feel respect for yourself and hope for yourself? And I think I could never do the job that many of these people do. And I don't think it's an easy job, and it's probably not particularly well compensated, and the circumstances are challenging. But can we somehow shift and make basic respect part of what we deliver in our criminal justice system?
The community conversation was held at Unionville Elementary School and hosted by the Monroe County Human Rights Commission. In an email to WFHB, County Attorney Margie Rice said officials hope to change the criminal justice system to positively reflect the community values. She said county officials hope to, quote, improve outcomes for justice-served individuals, perhaps reduce recidivism, and handle criminal justice-related matters efficiently and in the most human-centric, compassionate manner, unquote. Some community members shared their stories of being thrown in jail or otherwise penalized for small probation infractions. One man said he was thrown in jail after being unable to comply with a regular drug testing requirement due to a shy bladder. He said he sought a doctor's help after being routinely asked to urinate in front of people for the drug test, but to no avail. He proposed alternative forms of drug testing.
No, so these things that are very easy to do, swabbing the inside of someone's mouth or testing a little bit of their hair off of their head, we don't want to do that. That would prove too many people innocent of illegal drug use. No, we want to force them to urinate in front of someone even when they can't do it, even when it's impossible to do it.
Another unidentified community member said she too had observed a harsh attitude from criminal justice officials towards small infractions. She asked that they develop a more helpful attitude.
That level of intolerance, of not understanding, pits the population against these populations against one another, when really, if we're really about restorative justice, they should be working together.
Another unnamed woman said availability and cost of hygiene products needed to be addressed immediately.
Folks are going without basic hygiene needs. Some girls don't have undergarments, you know, and I can't believe that we can't do something. You know, I know this was something that got talked about a lot last week, but right now there are folks who don't have basic hygiene items because every different type of vendor, there's a charge for the phone card, there's a charge for their hygiene needs, there's a charge for
commissary.
Yeah, I know, I'm not trying to beat a dead horse. I know we really, really talked about this last week, but I'm just heartsick that there are young women without undergarments or without basic hygiene, and the men as well.
The woman, who has a daughter who is incarcerated, was dismayed at the cost of basic hygiene and health care. She said she felt hammered with the fees charged by multiple vendors for hygiene supplies, food, telephone calls, and medical care.
We're spending our money thinking they're getting the things, you know, just the basic things they need, and they're not. And the thing above all that broke my heart is when Debbie, who was here, said that some of these folks will not go to the nurse because the nurse costs $15.
That's crazy.
And they'd rather have deodorant and toothpaste that week and just be okay with whatever ailment they have because it's gonna take $15 just to be seen. Why? I get that she's a contracted third party, the nurse, but why do we not have a county employee nurse that's just there?
Like the schools.
Like the schools or any factory around here has a nurse that's on duty, you know.
Some community members also asked for more training or retraining for jail staff, public defenders, and even judges. Accountability and restorative justice between victim and offender were also topics of concern. One community member suggested looking beyond the United States for models for improvement. His comments drew some affirmative nods from other participants.
There are models out there. We have a daughter that lives in Germany. They handle this completely differently. I recently read an article about how drug addiction is dealt with in Sweden. Love versus hate. It's just that simple.
Mm-hmm.
Love. You're taking the person that most needs love by their society, the person at the very bottom, can't get out of bed in the morning, and we basically are throwing them away. One thing about being the worst, there's lots of examples of better. And there are models, evidence-based best practices. We do not in Bloomington have to figure this out. There are models out there, mostly in other countries. We got the highest incarceration rate in the world.
That's right.
And it's not even close. The question is, does the system want to be fixed?
That's right.
The Monroe County Commissioners approved hiring two consultants to help with the criminal justice review at a cost of more than $200,000. Rice said she anticipates a report from the consultants in January of 2020. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Todd Wicks.
And I'm Don Guerra. The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com. You're listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB.
And coming up next is Artbeat with Dr. Feliz Cicek.
Welcome to Artbeat with Dr. Feliz Cicek at WFHB. Our guest today is Danielle Bruce. She's a local multimedia artist. Welcome, Danielle.
Hi, thank you.
You are involved in many different types of art projects over the years that I know you. What are you working on right now?
Well, right now I am working with Bill and Glenda Breeden on a project called Sentences, From the Pen to the Page, and it's actually about inmates in Pendleton Prison as well as locally at the jail. They have a writer's group, cultivated this incredible kind of ritual of working with these inmates that, one, if you're visiting them as a person or if you're actually going in and writing collaborating with them, just kind of getting their take on their life now, as whether it's, you know, a life sentence or if they're just incarcerated for a short period of time. And a lot of it's just to raise awareness about the prison system in the country. Bill and Glenda are huge activists and want to abolish the death penalty, which I am all for. And so it's really brought this to light in my life personally. And we're hoping to produce it in early September. Glenda has been working with a particular prisoner for about 12 years and has written poetry with him and about him. And it's a lot of her observations, whether it's stories or poetry, and this inmate has written as well and is an incredible writer. And Gladys went to her before, maybe let's say last year, and said, I'd love to see some of this come to the stage. And since she talked to me about it, and I said, yes, this is really interesting stuff. And so the evening is basically a lot of his writing as well as Glenda's writing, and then also some local writing from women at prison, you know, and then there's some music in there as well. It's a really uniquely textured evening, I would say, but it really the commentary is about none of us are just one thing. You know, I think that's the biggest take-home message in all of it, is that I think that we want to look at our lives as more complete than that, even in some of the worst things we've ever done, or having that as a memory, or being known just for that thing. There's such a flaw in our system that it's made me very aware of what needs to happen to bring back the humanity, I think, in people and just in these institutions.
Sounds like you are touched by this project.
Yes. Last year, Glass Devane and Liz Mitchell and I took a couple pieces to Pendleton last year and performed for them. And it was the most rewarding experience I've ever had. I was very unsure going in. I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know what kind of audience they could possibly be or how to really even reach them. And it was the most welcoming, most interactive audience we've ever had. They were so engaged. Now, granted, I mean, they probably don't have a great amount of distraction in the day, so anything is welcomed. But they were actually really invested, and we were in them. And it was really rewarding, and it changed my whole perspective on how to reach an audience and who could be your audience, what would be the content of your shows, you know?
And what was the content?
This one was a piece that Gladys had written that was a slave piece that she then performed for them. Then we had a talk back afterward, and it was really just incredible. They were really engaged, some of the best questions I've ever heard, largely about where we are today in relation to what they were witnessing on stage, you know, what they were experiencing, saying, have we come a long way? Why haven't we come farther? And what can we do to keep motivating this change? Well, the story was a slave piece, and it was called What Little Missy Didn't Know. It was about how a slave girl learned to read, and the slave girl was purchased for the daughter of this wealthy family, a plantation owner. She would, you know, basically tend to her every need, but along the way, this little girl's learning how to read, and she has to carry her books, she has to tote them for them, she has to do everything for her. Along the way, she learns how to read. She teaches herself with this little girl how to read, but no one ever knew. And this is actually based on a bit of history where they had found at a plantation all of these books under this bed. Thought there's just no way in the world. They didn't think any slaves could read because, you know, it was highly problematic if a slave read. I mean, it wasn't not against the law in some cases, but it would be severely punished.
And it was an unwritten law.
Yes, absolutely. But it turns out she could read, she could write. So she had read every book probably in that house, but no one ever knew. And it was such a fascinating story. And I think it was such an inspiring story. And I think, too, a lot of the guys in there, I mean, they're in there with heavy duty sentences, most of them. I think it was kind of just reconnecting to the world and the inspiration and the hope in those moments where there's just that kernel of something that inspires you that you just are a part of.
Connecting to humanity.
Yes,
through
absolutely.
Art.
Yeah, absolutely. And I really felt the impact we had on an audience. One of the first times in my life I could actually viscerally feel them experiencing this piece. And it was really amazing.
I look forward to seeing it. So thank you, Danielle, for coming.
Thank you so much for having me.
You have been listening to Artbeat with Dr. Felice Cicek on WFHB. Artbeat is produced in partnership with the Arts Alliance of Greater Bloomington. Tune in on Tuesdays on WFHB after 7:50 in the morning and again during the daily local news at 5 p.m. Or you can listen online at wfhb.org.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Wes Martin, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services.
Artbeat is produced by Dr. Felice Cicek. Our engineer is Kevin Oliver. Our theme music is provided by Ben Lumsdane, Scott Schmedke, and Danny Graff. For WFHB, this is Todd Wicks.
And I'm Don Guerra. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast as well as all other WFHB news programming online at wfhb.org.
You too can be a part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, please email news at wfhb.org.
Stay tuned for Counterspin, fairness and accuracy in reporting's weekly radio show, providing a critical examination of national headlines. That's coming up next on WFHB.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB Bloomington Community Radio. Our news is written and reported by volunteers working to provide local news, cover local issues, and strengthen our local community. We invite you to participate. You may submit questions, comments, and story ideas to news@wfhb.org. You can become a Daily Local News volunteer by attending new volunteer orientation. You can find an archive of past shows and individual news reports online at wfhb.org and catch live broadcast of the Daily Local News Monday through Thursday at 5 p.m. We are local, longer.